Welcome to your Performance Intelligence Briefing. I'm bringing you a critical finding today that might save you or someone you care about weeks of unnecessary recovery time. We're talking about a systemic problem hiding in plain sight. Hospitals are feeding patients the exact foods that exacerbate the conditions they're treating. Let me paint the picture. You check into a cardiac unit after a heart event, and what arrives on your tray? Processed meats loaded with seed oils, sugary desserts, refined carbohydrates. The very inflammatory foods that contributed to your condition in the first place. Multiple physicians are now documenting this pattern. Cardiologists are still pushing outdated salt restrictions while ignoring sugar reduction and processed food elimination. The disconnect is staggering when you consider the research. Here's what the evidence shows. Insulin resistance and systemic inflammation, predominantly driven by processed food consumption, are now recognized as underlying mechanisms in most chronic conditions. Every cell in your body, every cognitive function, is directly influenced by what you consume. And during vulnerable healing periods, this influence is magnified. Yet institutional nutrition rarely reflects this understanding. The protocol here is simple, but requires proactive planning. Before any scheduled procedure, have the nutrition conversation with your healthcare team. Request simple, anti-inflammatory meals, plain proteins, vegetables, whole foods. This isn't about perfection during recovery. It's about not actively working against your healing mechanisms. And yes, this means those well-meaning comfort foods from family might not be supporting optimal recovery, even though the intention is good. Your body doesn't care about intentions when it's trying to repair tissue and manage inflammation. Now let's shift to a performance paradox that's affecting many high achievers in this audience. Recent research is revealing something counterintuitive. The more you try to control outcomes through pure willpower, the more fragile and less effective you become. This particularly impacts what psychologists call insecure overachievers, successful people driven not by genuine interest, but by a need to constantly prove something. The cycle is self-reinforcing and self-sabotaging. Each achievement immediately becomes your new baseline expectation rather than a source of satisfaction. You're always chasing the next validation. This anxiety-driven approach to performance optimization actually undermines the flow states where peak performance naturally occurs. The data on flow states is clear. Peak performance happens when you're fully engaged, but not desperately attached to specific outcomes. You can pursue ambitious goals while separating your self-worth from the results. Here's the reframe worth considering. What if your current constraints, your limitations, the fact that you have finite time and limited control, what if accepting these fundamental realities could be liberating rather than limiting? This isn't resignation. It's redirecting energy from what you cannot control to full engagement with what's directly in front of you. Building on that concept, curiosity and genuine interest provide more reliable long-term fuel than anxiety-driven achievement. The mantra some elite performers use is, "I don't mind what happens." That doesn't mean being passive or eliminating ambition. It means maintaining full effort while staying emotionally flexible about outcomes. For those of us obsessed with optimization, this reframes the entire performance equation. Instead of white-knuckling through stress-fueled achievement, ask yourself whether your current approach is truly sustainable over decades. The goal isn't eliminating ambition, it's finding fuel sources that don't require constant emotional firefighting. Let's get tactical with training optimization. Recent discussions among performance coaches have surfaced several evidence-validated protocols that balance scientific principles with real-world sustainability. First, the 60-40 framework. A strength-to-conditioning split around 60% strength, 40% conditioning, provides foundational structure while acknowledging individual variation. What matters most isn't achieving the perfect ratio, it's consistent adherence to a sustainable program over years. Here's a recovery biomarker you can track with zero equipment. Grip strength testing, validated through performance sports applications, offers a practical way to monitor systemic recovery. The protocol is simple. Test your max grip strength when fully recovered to establish your baseline, then track it. If your grip strength is significantly reduced on a given day, that signals incomplete recovery, regardless of how you subjectively feel. Your nervous system is telling you something through that delta in force production. The walking research just got more interesting. New evidence suggests that continuous 15-minute walking bouts provide superior cardiovascular benefits compared to 3 5-minute sessions, even with identical total step counts. Same total volume, different physiological response. The key variable appears to be bout duration, not just accumulated steps. More importantly, research on lactate production and brain-derived neurotrophic factor, BDNF, suggests that moderate intensity exercise alone may be insufficient for optimal neuroplasticity. Some high-intensity work appears beneficial for cognitive function and neural adaptation. We're still establishing optimal protocols, but the signal is clear. If you're only doing zone 2 cardio and strength training, you might be missing a key stimulus for brain health. Stretching timing also matters more than most people realize. The evidence suggests passive stretching is most effective
effective post-workout for flexibility gains, while dynamic movement preparation works better pre-workout. This relates to neurological recalibration periods that affect motor patterns. Your nervous system needs time to integrate new ranges of motion. Stretching after training capitalizes on that window. The practical application here is focusing on sustainable daily systems rather than perfectionist approaches. Small technical adjustments in grip mechanics and shoulder positioning can prevent the common training injuries that derail consistency. The goal is building long-term adherence while minimizing injury risk through evidence-based modifications. Not perfect execution, sustainable execution. Now let's shift to vitamin D research. Recent research has revealed a significant gap between minimum requirements and optimal function, though individual needs vary considerably and the science is still evolving. Here's what you need to understand. There are two systems at play. The endocrine system, governing bone health, requires minimum dosing, but cellular-level conversion systems that may influence immune function and disease prevention appear to benefit from higher doses in some populations. Studies suggest 8,000 to 10,000 IU daily may be beneficial for certain individuals, though this remains an area of active research. The evidence is promising, but not yet definitive. Some studies have shown a 22% reduction in autoimmune disease risk in specific populations, associations with improved metabolic function, and potential cancer risk reduction. Important context, these are associations from observational studies, not proven cause and effect. More research is needed to establish mechanisms and optimal protocols. The magnesium connection, however, is well established. Magnesium, particularly glycinate form at 200 to 400 milligrams daily, is required for vitamin D utilization. Many people supplementing with D3 are not seeing expected benefits because they're magnesium deficient. You're essentially pouring fuel into a system that can't process it. The protocol here involves working with your healthcare provider to test baseline vitamin D levels using the 25-hydroxy vitamin D marker. Consider your individual risk factors, sun exposure, and dietary intake. Discuss whether supplementation makes sense for your specific situation. If you do supplement, include K2 and magnesium to support proper utilization. Then retest after 3 to 6 months to assess your individual response. True toxicity is rare and requires extremely high doses over extended periods, but more isn't always better. Optimization requires finding your individual therapeutic window, not chasing arbitrary numbers. Now let's talk about a metabolic marker that deserves serious reconsideration based on emerging research, cholesterol. Our understanding may be more nuanced than conventional guidelines suggest, though this remains an evolving area where individual assessment is crucial. Here's the critical distinction most standard tests miss. Not all LDL is equal. Advanced lipid testing reveals that small, dense LDL particles combined with high glucose and insulin resistance appear far more problematic than large, buoyant particles. Your standard cholesterol panel doesn't capture this distinction. You could have a high LDL number but favorable particle size, or a moderate number with dangerous small particles. The context matters enormously. Consider cholesterol's essential roles. Your body produces approximately 3,000 milligrams of cholesterol daily for critical functions. Cell membrane integrity, hormone synthesis, including testosterone, cortisol, and DHEA, vitamin D conversion, immune system support. This isn't waste your body is producing. These are fundamental building blocks. The root cause perspective suggests elevated cholesterol may be a marker of underlying issues rather than the primary problem. Chronic stress, inflammation, metabolic dysfunction, these drive cholesterol production as your body attempts to respond to perceived threats. This suggests addressing diet, stress management, and metabolic health rather than focusing solely on the number itself. Building on that concept, statin medications block cholesterol synthesis, but also CoQ10 production, which research suggests may affect muscle function and energy metabolism. This is worth discussing with your doctor if statins are recommended. Here's surprising research that challenges conventional thinking. Some studies in older adults show associations with low cholesterol and higher all-cause mortality. This contradicts the lower is always better assumption that's dominated medical thinking for decades. However, individual cardiovascular risk factors must always be considered. This isn't a blank recommendation against cholesterol management. It's highlighting that context matters. The practical approach involves requesting advanced lipid profiling that measures particle size and count, not just total cholesterol. Address metabolic health through nutrition and lifestyle optimization. Monitor inflammation markers like high-sensitivity C-reactive protein and oxidized LDL. Consider stress management and sleep optimization as primary interventions. And work with a healthcare provider who considers the full context of your metabolic health, not just isolated numbers on a standard panel. This isn't medical advice. It's an invitation to have more informed conversations with your healthcare team about what your numbers actually mean in your specific situation. Let me give you some immediately actionable protocols worth testing. Pomegranate juice for arterial health. Clinical trials have demonstrated that pomegranate juice may reduce arterial plaque by up to 35% through antioxidant mechanisms and prevention of LDL oxidation. The delta on the arterial imaging is significant in some studies. This is accessible, low risk, and backed by human trials. Consider 4 to 8 ounces daily as part of a whole food approach. If hospitalization becomes necessary, implement these safety protocols. Verify all medications, dosages, and timing upon admission. Question any vital sign-based treatments that don't account for your individual baseline. Monitor cognitive function closely. Any mental changes warrant immediate attention. And bring or request simple anti-inflammatory meals. Take control of the variables you can control. For sustainable nutrition without the complexity of calorie counting, the plate method provides structure. Half your plate, non-starchy vegetables. Quarter plate, quality protein. Quarter plate, complex carbohydrates. Add healthy fats. This approach emphasizes long-term sustainability over short-term restriction. It's a framework that scales across different goals and life circumstances. During major life transitions or health challenges, establish structured physical practices. Research supports Brazilian jiu-jitsu, martial arts, or intense exercise for stress regulation and emotional processing. Allow complete processing time before making major decisions. Create systematic routines that provide stability when everything else is in flux. Build community connections through shared physical activities. Here's the long-term perspective that multiple elite athletes and medical professionals emphasize. They're not optimizing for how they feel at 50. They're optimizing for their function at 80. This reframes every daily choice as a long-term investment rather than a short-term fix. The protocols you implement today are either building capacity for decades ahead or borrowing from your future function. Your N-of-1 experiment for this week. Track your grip strength daily for 7 days using a consistent protocol. Establish your recovered baseline, then monitor the delta. Notice how it correlates with your subjective sense of recovery. This gives you objective data on systemic stress and adaptation. Simple, equipment-free if you use a bathroom scale, and immediately actionable. Optimize your day. Talk tomorrow.